3. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grim Interviews with Revy Innovations, creator of the Spinning Robot Pussy. We are back with part 2 of the discussion. Sorry if the footage is a little old. I had to have at least an hour for him to talk and, you know, you to watch something. Of course, you should be paying attention to Revy because you might learn something. At any rate, let's go ahead and, well, we'll get started, and Dead Penetration is here. Let him talk a little bit about the Spinning Robot Pussy. You have one. Right. You tried it. What do you think?
I thought it was pretty good. It, I did have, you know, I checked it out, and the sizes, I think the smaller size was more of a polishing tool than anything else. It kind of warmed you up and then used the bigger one to actually use. But I did neglect to trim, which I said in the instructions. So I've had a few missing hairs, but nothing serious. The lube was good, pleasant smelling. It kind of had a little petroleum base to it, and I added a little water to it to make it a little slicker, and it slickened up just fine.
Absolutely.
I can tell, I feel like it would probably have worked better in a doll, but other than that, it did really well. I guess if I was to say improvements, maybe some different, I guess, textures on the inside, maybe like those little floppy tentacles or beads that are in some sex toys.
Oh, yeah, okay, I see.
But that would probably make it more user-friendly, or depending on what time limit you're working with. But, yeah, it worked great. I mean, I liked the knob settings where you could change the speed with the knob. That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, I'd say it's a good product.
So. Okay. So you recommend it. You would definitely recommend it.
I would definitely say it probably would work better with a doll.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
But you can use it without
one. So do you not have a doll?
No.
Oh, no.
No.
I did use kind of a gap between it and the base of me, and that improved it quite a bit.
Yeah, but you're saying it works pretty good as a standalone product.
Because I knew in the directions the labia was there, so I had another device where it's a fake vagina attachment, and put that there, and then that behind it.
Then,
so it was more like using it all, and that improved it quite a bit.
I thought I gave you one of those giant asses I had.
No.
Oh, well, who did I give a giant ass? I know I had a giant...
Your buddy's out of town.
Oh, maybe. Man. Yeah, I remember. No, I gave him that giant ass, that damn fucking child molester. I gave him a giant ass and he still wanted to touch a kid.
I hate that you're putting me in the same sentence.
Not you, the guy.
I'm not the child molester.
I know
you're
not.
Me in the same
sentence. I know that.
Was it you or the child molester?
No.
I get so mixed up.
I know that, but yeah.
If you have a doll, like a toy like that, I know you can shove the SRP. If you have a toy that you don't care about like damaging, and that doesn't have it SRP compatible officially, you can still shove the SRP in it, and it'll kind of stick out the front.
Right, that's what I figured.
And I mean, you can still use it.
Oh yeah, it. I mean, it worked. I noticed that was probably more the design anyway, so that's why I tried.
A toy, yeah.
The head of the other toy I had. I'm racking up on toys. If the apocalypse ever comes, I'll never never be wanting for a company.
Wow. Oh, man. Some say we're already there. Badger Streams was saying today that women are considering sex as transactional? It's like, yeah, I kind of figured that was going to happen.
I think they're already there.
Well, no, I said, well, like, purely. Purely transactional.
They expect to get paid for you to look at them naked. Right?
I know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Well, I can pay to have a great game. By the way, GOG got what did they get? Demon Slayer Incubus or something? It's an action Euroge game. I've been wanting it. I'm like, oh shit, they got it on GOG. So we'll probably play through that soon.
Oh yeah.
But all right. At any rate, let's go ahead and start the main subject, which is the part two of our previous robotics discussion. So, Revy filled us in on that the first part, which was very complex. My mind was pretty much blown. And you said you have a lot more to talk about, so I'm going to shut my mouth and let you kind of, you know, tell us a little bit more about this great field of research.
So, the first one was basically, what is robotics, and what do people mean when they talk about robotics? So, now it gets a bit more practical. And I want to talk about how to get into robotics and how to get a high-paying robotics job.
Wow.
So that basically means what is the shortest path to getting a job as a robotics design engineer, ideally without a college degree, or perhaps you have a degree that's irrelevant, like you have like 18th century English literature, and you want something that actually pays. So, I want to go into the details of what that means. Firstly, the robotic design engineer. What is the advantage of a design engineer? Design engineer basically means you're the one who designs the robot. And the reason why that is nice is because it enables you to one-man army stuff. So, if you're a design engineer, that basically means you do the design work, you decide what it looks like, and then you... And then in order to do that design work, you need to actually know how to actually do the work. Because if you don't know how to do the work, then you're going to design, you don't have to build something, then you're going to design something that can't be built.
Right.
So designers inherently have to be able to do every other part of the process. Whereas if you are an engineer specializing in any other kind of the part of the process, you weren't necessarily going to be able to do design or testing or manufacturing. But if you do design, you can do all of these things, and that enables you to one-man army stuff, which will be useful later on. And it also gives you the flexibility of being able to take on any role. And it also is more fulfilling, obviously.
Right.
It's also kind of the most advanced, I guess you can say, advanced role you can have as an engineer, so it's going to pay the most. And then when we talk about shortest path, what is the advantage to the shortest path? And the reason is because robotics, you can't really learn. The best way to learn robotics is by doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you were to, you can't learn robotics in a classroom. Mm-hmm. You have to be given work and then actually figure out how to build the robot. And that's the best way to learn robotics. And so the advantage of being able to get a job is you want the shortest path that you can get paid to build something. And even if you could spend more time in school to build your skills, you don't want to do that. You want to get a job as fast as you can. And that way you're paying the bills while also improving. And there's a certain importance that you get a design engineer role, because if you get something like a test engineer or a manufacturing engineer, you can do that for a short amount of time, but you're going to learn all there is to learn about that role very quickly. And after that, it kind of becomes a dead end job. Whereas if you're a design engineer, the more you design, the more you learn. And it's basically an infinite career climb.
Wow.
So that's what we want to go into. Now, this is not the path that I took myself. This is basically information that I am getting from what I've seen other people do. And so let's talk about what my path was. So I got a college degree, right? It was in one of those traditional engineering fields. So I have a degree in mechanical, electrical, software engineering. These are the typical roles. So I got a degree in one of those, and then I ended up working for a research lab. And then after working on the research lab, I went to the industry. The reason why the research lab, so if you are going to want to go into engineering or a robotics, if you want to become a robotics design engineer and you want to basically, you're already taking a traditional career route, which is you have a college degree, a relevant college degree, or you're getting a relevant college degree, I would highly recommend you go work for a research lab. The advantage of the research labs is they're typically based out of universities, so don't stay there for too long. It's definitely more of a career building thing. If you're doing this for more than a year, you're doing it wrong. But because it's part of a university, they're expecting to hire basically idiots. And so that makes it easier to get a job there. And they also are more tolerant of you not knowing stuff and you going out of your way to learn stuff. They're more tolerant of that. And the downside is, number one, they don't pay you jack shit. But then again, you aren't worth shit.
Right.
At your early stage of the career. So it doesn't matter if they aren't teaching you anything. What matters is you gain experience. And the second thing is they also work you like, they cause a complete violation of like work-life balance. Sure. Which when you're young is what you want, because that's the fastest way to boost your career. And but that's also the reason why you don't want to stay in such a role, because it is not a good long-term thing.
Right.
The other advantage of research labs is that they do really cool stuff, which means you can put really cool stuff on your resume.
Right.
So you can be a not very skilled person, you can work on something that's really cool, and you can put really cool stuff on your resume. So that way, when you are actually ready to begin your career, you can begin your career as a highly paid engineer in a, let's say, a prestigious or a prestigious company.
Sure.
Or some kind of advanced position, because you have this really impressive thing on your resume. And of course, you don't want to tell them how much you were getting paid and how little you were actually qualified, but you worked on something really cool. So that's why I would suggest most people, you want to get a job at a research lab if you can. And it's usually pretty easy. And you use that to basically jumpstart your career.
Wow.
Yeah. There are ways to get into robotics that don't involve getting a college degree. But also, before we get to that, we have to talk about the subdisciplines of robotics. So you have mechanical engineering. Usually, if we look at a robotics team, usually we have a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer, a low-level software engineer, and a high-level software engineer. So low-level means you're integrating electronic components. You're allowing the computer to talk with the motors and all that stuff. And high-level software engineer is you don't speak with the hardware directly, but you decide what the robot is doing. And so this would be things like computer vision, machine learning, and sometimes it's user interface. If it's being controlled by a human, it's a user interface. If it's using some kind of AI, you've got machine learning or computer vision. So let's go through each of these one at a time. Let's start with the electrical engineer. If you're going to join a robotics team, you're going to be joining a robotics team in one of these roles. And so we want to talk about which specialty do you want. And once you learn one specialty, you can always branch off into others. It's pretty easy. So you don't want to go into electrical engineering. And the reason why is because electrical engineering requires buying hardware. It requires buying physical things. And those physical things are expensive. And when you're building stuff, you typically have to buy like three times more than you actually need, because you need one as a backup, you fry one, you break another one, you decide, hey, I don't actually want this, I want this other thing, so you have to buy this other thing. It's basically a giant money pit.
Right.
And so if you do have a college degree, you can get hired as an entry-level employee, and you can basically spend someone else's money. But if you don't have a college degree, then you are going to try to be learning on your own. You're going to have to fund the beginning of your education on your own. And you are not going to, unless you have a ton of money, you're not going to be able to afford building your skills up to the point where you can get hired as a job, as a paid employee. And that paid employee is important, because once you have that paid employee status, you can spend someone else's money to learn. But in order to get to there, you need to build your skills up to a certain level. And as an electrical engineer, that's too expensive, because you have to buy too much stuff. So in contrast to that, you want to go into software engineering. Software engineering, specifically high-level software engineering, is specifically stuff you can do without access to hardware. So that means, like, for example, if you want to learn computer vision, all you need is a camera, right? You can even use a camera on your smartphone, and you can begin coding computer vision stuff. And that allows you to learn as much as you can, and all you need is a computer and maybe a camera. And if you're doing computer vision, but you do need a pretty powerful computer if you want any kind of simulations. But that's all, ultimately all it is. It's just a computer. So you're not actually spending money.
Right.
The other advantage to high-level software engineer that doesn't require hardware is that since it doesn't require physical devices, you can work remotely.
Wow.
Now, most companies will hire you directly as a remote, but you can get started working on site, and then you can start showing up to work less and less. Generally speaking, engineers, people don't care if engineers show up. Huh. I think with the more traditional companies, they care about the 9-to-5, but especially with the startups, the engineers are not, people don't fuck with engineers. Like, as long as you're getting your stuff done, they don't care how you do it. I have never worked a 9-to-5. I do work on site simply because I am a hardware engineer. I do need access to physical things. That's why I work on site.
Yeah.
But then when I do software engineering projects, I don't go on site. I work remotely because there's no reason for me. And that's one of the advantages of being a high level software engineer is that doesn't need access to hardware. So I do know that I do know people who have pulled that off. And so a high-level software engineer is one way to do it. You can always go to a coding bootcamp to learn how to code, or you can just learn to code by yourself. And you can, I'm sure if you came up with some kind of fancy computer vision thing, most people would hire you. If you know, say, OpenCV, and you made a little OpenCV app on your phone that allowed you to, say, map a 3D environment, people would just hire you.
Right.
Or maybe if you simulate a robot or, driving. Simulation gets a little bit weird, but it's not that. If you are like doing something with a physical robot, you only need to buy one of those robots. So that might cost money, but not too much money. And then if you go in between, right, you have a low-level software engineer. Low-level software engineer basically means that you are writing code for the hardware. Now this is slightly in the middle. You do need to buy hardware. You need to have something to program. So you have to buy it. But because you're not actually physically designing the physical thing, you're buying something that you know works. So you only had to buy it once. So let's say that I am working as a low-level software engineer. Right, and also we have similar things with the with being able to work remotely. So with being able to work remotely, you still need access to the physical thing, but they only ship it to you once. So when I work on firmware projects and I work remotely, people will ship me the thing once, and every low-level software engineer will have their own robot, and we'll all just be programming our robots. And then we'll send code to each other, and I'll be like, hey, I wrote this code. I think it works. You want to try it out? And then I'll email it to them. They'll download it, and then they'll run it on their robot. So it's remote, but it's remote. It's sometimes you do want to come in. It's one of those jobs where you can work mostly remote, but every once in a while, you will need to drive into the office to actually work in person.
Sure.
It's not a purely remote thing. And it's also kind of, it is a one possible option, to self-teach yourself because you only have to buy the hardware once. So it won't break the bank. It will cost you more than computer vision and it will be more of a limitation, but it's not impossible. You do have to have some funds to do it. Okay. So in conclusion, between electrical, low-level software and high-level software, you, in order to self-teach yourself, without a college degree, you have to pick something that isn't going to require hardware. So you can learn without breaking your bank, and you can get your skills to the point where someone else will hire you so you can learn with someone else's money. I've also seen people where they started off as software engineers, and then after getting hired as a paid employee, then they will transition to a hardware engineer, and they will start learning the hardware, and they got hired, and they will start learning hardware on someone else, on their employer's dime. So I've seen that happen, but learning hardware on your own, learning electrical engineering on your own, I've never seen that.
Wow.
So, yeah. In conclusion, if you're going to be self-taught, do software, because it doesn't require hardware. There's another thing about another reason why I haven't seen electrical engineers self-taught, which is as an electrical engineer, you're going to be frying stuff. And yeah. Some of these things, there are cheaper electronics out there. Like you can buy Arduinos and stuff, and it only costs a couple bucks. But if you want to get any level of skill, people are going to be expecting you to buy. Number one, even though these things are cheap, you're going to be blowing through them. And also, every once in a while, you encounter something where you need something expensive. So that kind of sucks. Most of these things are like less than 10 bucks, mm-hmm. Maybe a bit more with inflation. But they add up really quickly, and you're going to, most importantly, you're going to be blowing stuff up. And that's another reason why it's going to be hard to teach yourself, because an employer is not going to want to hire a unproven electrical engineer.
Sure.
Because they're worried that the electrical engineer is going to blow up like this $100 microprocessor.
Right.
On top of like a $2,000 PCB. Mm. Right. So because of that, there's a much higher barrier to entry. And I've seen cases where people, even people who do have electrical engineering degrees, what will happen is people with electrical engineering degrees, they'll graduate with an electrical engineering degree, and their employer will be like, I don't trust you to build electronics. Because when you mess up electronics, it costs a lot of money.
Right.
We're talking about like making a mistake in software costs you nothing. It costs maybe a minute of compile time, and then it's like, oh, I made this error. And then maybe it takes you another few minutes to find a mistake.
Right.
And electrical engineering, we're talking about a PCB that's worth at least several hundred dollars. Once you add the components in there, when you add the components, the PCB is worth between several hundred dollars to several thousand dollars. And if you blow that up, let's say you design a PCB wrong, right? You make a mistake. Right. In order for you to redesign that PCB, you have to recreate the files, and then you have to send it again, and that's going to cost you another month and another few thousand dollars. So because of this high cost of making mistakes, it's very difficult to get hired as a design electrical engineer.
Man.
So that's it for that. But let's move on to mechanical engineering. Mechanical engineering is the interesting one. Now, officially, mechanical engineers have like a whole bunch of random skills, like being able to do like fluid computations and stuff. Unless you're going to be working on aircraft or automobiles, I haven't seen that happen. Most of the time, mechanical engineers are basically building random, like, usually it's enclosures for electronics, or sometimes it's like, or sometimes it's like mounts for stuff. But generally speaking, you don't need that fancy stuff. What you need to know is you need to know how to CAD, right, to design stuff on a computer, and you need to know how to fabricate stuff. And we kind of touched on it the last time. But one of the advantages, if you have a skill in the trades, for example, if you know how to weld, if you know how to machine, right, you can go, you, all you have to do is learn how to CAD. And then once you learn how to CAD, you can get hired as a mechanical engineer. I'm going to repeat this from the last one. All the best mechanical engineers I know, they have been machinists. They were machinists. Some of them had college degrees, some of them didn't, but they were all machinists, and they just learned how to CAD. I think one guy didn't have a college degree. Another guy, he had an arts degree, I think, but he became a really good machinist.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's the trades, right? It's basically trades plus design. That's the nice thing about being a mechanical engineer. not going into mechanical engineering, it's not my trade background. In terms of the amount of money it costs you, if you're already trained as a machinist, then what's going to happen is engineers are going to be like, hey, I need this built. Build it for me.
Right.
Now, there are two kinds of machinists. There are machinists that will be like, they will build it exactly to the drawing, even if the drawing is wrong. And there are machinists that will look at the drawing and be like, hey, I see these improvements. I can make these improvements to your drawing. Right? Or maybe, hey, give me the file. I can edit the file to make it cheaper. And if you do that, that gives you two advantages. The first advantage is that makes you a better machinist. Engineers will pay more for a machinist that is not just a dumb machine, right? It's not just a robot. The machinist that will actually like look at your drawings and either modify your drawings if there's mistakes, point out mistakes, right? Point out possible improvements, make those possible improvements. Such a machinist, us engineers are willing to pay more for. And to a certain extent, if we decide you're good enough, we're going to be like, hey, I want this thing. These are requirements. I've seen you design stuff before. I'm too lazy to do this. Go at it. And that pays a lot of money because you're basically an engineer at that point. So number one, it increases your desirability as a machinist if you begin modifying the stuff you're hired to build. Obviously, don't modify stuff without people's permission. But if you can suggest improvements, then that's always great. Or you can like point things out. That's always great. And the other thing is, obviously, it's a great way to build practical experience. Actually, doing engineering work, doing design work, working with the computer-aided design software. So if you have any kind of fabrication trade, like a machinist or woodworking. Or like welding, then I highly recommend you go to become a mechanic engineer through that route.
Yeah, there you go.
There's another thing about mechanical engineering. There's another way out. It's slightly more difficult. But with modern day, what you call it, rapid prototyping, we're talking 3D printers, desktop CNCs, desktop laser cutters. These are machines that cost maybe $500. I have a 3D printer in front of me right now. It's a Creality Ender 3, and it costs $200. Once you add filament in there and some extra upgrades, we're talking like $250 for a 3D printer that can print pretty big things.
Cool.
And so the advantage of a 3D printer is that allows you to design things. And so you design something in your CAD software, and then you print it, and if you simply design stuff, people are going to be like, you're not going to design anything that's actually practical. You have to be able to fabricate the stuff that you design. You have to be able to test it.
Okay.
And normally that testing is what costs money. But if you have a 3D printer, you just fabricate your thing. You design your thing, you send it to a 3D printer, you print it, and then from there you can figure out your mistakes. Or you can sell the 3D printer, whatever.
Oh, sure.
So if you're not a machinist, that's another way you can become a mechanical engineer. It is going to cost you money, but a 3D printer, once you spend the money for a 3D printer, that's like maybe like $200, $300. Then after that, like a single 3D print costs maybe like only a couple dollars to actually print. So it's not much. And then you can basically design your own stuff. You can start freelancing. Like I've advertised my services online. People have hired me to 3D print stuff. But the difference is there are some people that just 3D print stuff. I know people who they do that. I use that service when I make the SRP. The SRP, I don't print those things. I know a guy who has like a ton of machines. So I send him an order I'm like, hey, give me parts for 30 SRPs. And then he just cranks up all his machines.
Wow.
So that's one thing you can do, right? But if you want to get paid more, you can design stuff as well. I know some people who run those kinds of 3D printing farms, and they also design their own stuff.
Cool.
Basically, what happens is people will be like, hey, I need, let's say, a custom-made grip for a gun, because I have this grip that I like, but I need it to be ambidextrous. Can you make that modification?
Right.
And so then you will design that grip, and you will 3D print it yourself. And because it's your design, you can charge more for that because you're basically doing engineering work. people will pay more for that because it's more work and they don't have to design it themselves.
I'm going to have to get the software instead.
Yeah, okay. Well, how about you talk about the CAD software and all that stuff. How much is that software alone going to run us? Is that like an Adobe Photoshop where it's like very expensive per month?
Yeah.
Or year, rather?
It depends on what software you use. There are free software, there are expensive software, right? The software that I'm familiar with is called SolidWorks. I don't know how much it is. I know it's expensive. I know I would never be able to afford it by myself.
So
that's one thing. You can do SolidWorks. SolidWorks is the most expensive one. It's also the industry standard.
Okay.
I know Fusion 360 is the second most popular one. That costs, I think, how much does it cost? I think it costs $300. No, they don't, it's an annual license now. How much does Fusion 360 cost?
That's how.
But anyway, there's also free ones. There's also free CADing softwares. But I would recommend Fusion 360.
Okay.
You can start on a free software, and then if you think you and then once you get to a certain point, you can switch to Fusion 360.
Now, do you need?
And then,
go ahead. Go ahead. Hello? Are you there?
It is Friday.
Okay, are you...
Fusion 360 is $400 a year. So,
Okay.
But there's also free ones, and there's also a lot of people I know. To be honest, most engineers I know who don't get their SolidWorks from an employer, they find other ways to get it.
Oh, well, that's fair.
Most engineers do find other ways.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm absolutely positive of that. I don't see anything wrong with it being that the software is so expensive.
I can tell you no one in the U.S. pays for it. Anyone, if you're not in the U.S., pretty much, like, there are people in third world countries. They're like, the SolidWorks costs more than, like,
their
year salary.
A $60 game is like 2 weeks of work for them. And that's why they had to do the regional pricing thing. Because people are like, well, I can't buy this. And they're like, oh, why is piracy going
on? SolidWorks is.
You know.
Yeah.
Not that.
How much is SolidWorks? Fusion 360 is $400 a year. That is reasonable price for anyone in the States.
Wow. $400 a year.
You have to be making money off of it.
Yeah.
There's a good chance your shop has a SolidWorks, right? So if you work for a machine shop, there's a good chance that machine shop has a SolidWorks.
Right.
So you just use their version of SolidWorks.
Okay.
They don't even post SolidWorks price.
I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, SolidWorks, Fusion 360. This is stuff that you definitely want to kind of look into. I mean, anybody listening, you know, if you're into this kind of stuff, that's how you start.
I've been wanting a CNC machine, but those get a little up into the thousands.
CNC machine?
Yeah, the price for one license of SolidWorks is $5,500. So $5,500 for the license and annual maintenance fee of $1,500.
Annual maintenance fee. Now that's annual per year, correct? So you have to pay $1,500 a year for maintenance fees on a license that you've paid $5,500. Ooh, they know how to get their money. Ooh, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you really have to be
careful.
But you got to understand.
People pay for it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I can understand that because you can actually use their program to make all kinds of money if you know what you're doing. And, I mean, it sounds like a pretty reasonable trade.
If you're starting, what you want to do is, I would recommend, as a, we'll call it the baseline product. Have you heard of the FTC9?
No, I have not.
No. It's called the Fuck Gun Control 9. It is a fully automatic 9mm submachine gun made almost entirely of 3D printed parts.
Wow!
Ooh, that'd be awesome. I just got an AR.
The printer that I have in front of me, it's... So, The story of that gun is they use a Creality Ender 3, which costs $200.
Wow.
And it's also the printer that I have. So they have a Creality Ender 3. They printed a gun. It costs the gun, I think, in terms of parts, the gun costs maybe $100.
Wow.
Just in terms of parts. Well, so we're talking for maybe like $300, $400.
Now,
you can have a fully functional machine gun. Obviously, if you're in the U.S., you might want to make some modifications to that, like extend the barrel so it's 16 inches.
Right.
And, you know, take out the full autos here. But, yeah, you can print. So that, if someone came to me and was like, hey, here's an FTP9 that I printed from my 3D printer, right? I also made some modifications because there were some things about the FTC9 that I didn't like, and I modified it in some way. And here it is, it's fully functional. I printed it on my 3D printer. Hired me as a mechanical engineer, I would be like, yeah.
Wow.
So
that's really cool.
I wouldn't recommend that the first thing you do in your 3D printer be print a gun. Probably print some janky ass, like, knock gun things first and wet your chops on some knock gun things. But you can print pretty, you can make pretty impressive stuff on a 3D printer.
Absolutely. I've seen people print, Nintendo, those Nintendo figurines that they were trying, they were printing their own because they're overpriced.
Yeah, that doesn't count. I understand why that doesn't count. It's not just about 3D printing stuff, it's about designing stuff for 3D print.
Right. Oh, I get that. Like designing things that are
cheaper.
Yeah, designing things that are useful.
Like, for example, I have some poles. I bought a ton of poles. They're part of a tent, but I'm not using the tent anymore. So I have all these poles laying around, and I want to build, I want to build like a structure for me to hang curtains on.
Sure.
Right, to make a room divider. So what I did is I designed these little plastic things to hold the poles together at certain angles, and they just hold them together, and I print them out, and I assemble it. And now I've got this useful thing, and it's practical, and I designed it myself. Like, I had to take a ruler and measure stuff to make sure it was, like, there were the correct dimensions, and then, I integrated it with, like, a screw and a bolt. I bought some screws and nuts and stuff, so, because obviously if it's pure 3D printed, it's going to be weak, so you want to reinforce it with some screws and some nuts. That's also how the FTC9 is made. It's mostly 3D printed parts. But, like, obviously the barrel is metal, the springs are metal. So you go to the hardware store and you buy some hardware store crap, and you reinforce it with the hardware store crap.
Yeah, see, I thought you were going to have to do that because I was heard that the big problem with the 3D printed guns is they break really easy.
You like, you get a certain kind of filament.
Yeah.
Several things, probably.
So there's a bunch of different ways about that. Oh, there's a certain 3D printed gun thing. I can't talk too much about it simply because I am in the process of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I have the correct 3D printer, and now I'm going to do the rest of the stuff. Obviously, don't make a gun the first thing you 3D print. You want to practice on some less risky things first. And obviously, you want to reinforce it with metal. And to reinforce it with metal, they don't use the normal 3D printing stuff. They use either PLA plus or like nylon or polycarbonate or just like the slightly more premium filaments. They cost more to buy, and you have to set up the printer differently. So you definitely don't want to start with that kind of stuff. But it's not that expensive. I mean, get some jackasses to build guns in your garage. Right. And that's only 3D printing. I mean, if you combine 3D printing with, let's say, you know how to weld, right? Some basic welding. You're not a full-on, like, paid welder, but you're, like, a basic welder. Now you've combined 3D printing and welding, so you can 3D print the complex things, and then the things that you need strength, you can weld, right? A desktop CNC machine. A desktop CNC machine you can buy for also, like, $200, slightly better ones for $500. And you can, desktop CNCs have their own capabilities and their own downsides. You can get, what else, laser cutters. I would recommend desktop CNCs and 3D printers because 3D printers are the most versatile and desktop CNCs are basically like smaller versions of real CNC. So playing around on a desktop CNC and building stuff with your own desktop CNC is basically like practice for operating a multi-$1,000 CNC that can actually build real gun parts.
Wow.
So that's the other option. In conclusion, you either go software or mechanical engineering. If you're a tradesman, go mechanical engineering. Just keep your trade that you already have and just learn how to CAD.
Okay.
If not, you're going to have to either choose between software engineering or mechanical engineering through the 3D printer, rapid prototyping routes, so 3D printers, desktop CNC, just desktop shit. If you like to be more hands-on, then obviously go mechanical engineering. If you don't like handling things, if you like working purely on your computer and you like working remotely, then high-level software engineer.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to see if anybody has any questions before we head off here for this one. I'm going to go check. Hey, does anybody have any questions? I know there's some people here. If there's anything you want to ask Revy, go ahead and put your questions in the interview chat channel now, as soon as you can. You should see it on the server here. But check interview chat channel and just go ahead and write your questions in there. If anybody has any questions, we're going to give you guys maybe about, I don't know, a few minutes to see if they have anything they need to say.
If you want to be like, hey, this is my situation, what would you recommend I do if I want to get into robotics? You mentioned something about like wanting to, it seems you're kind of weird because it seems like you're working a low skill job, even though you seem to have work experience doing other stuff.
Well, I think I'm just really getting more into marketing. Like, I kind of want to sell people stuff and promote things. Like, I want to promote the kind of stuff that people like yourself and other people that I've seen in the community do. I want, to get that word out, cool innovations, and it comes, different kinds of art, music, all that kinds of thing, games, robotics, like, the things you do. That's more my thing. I've been in retail for 12 years. I've done the things with the record labels. I've been a promoter of just everything. I mean, they've sent me movies, they've sent me games, they've sent me music, everything. And that's pretty much what I feel comfortable doing. Like, that's what I enjoy doing, is promoting things I like and getting other people interested into, like, oh, that's cool, I always like promoting that stuff. And I think the stuff that you do is really cool, and I think the stuff that a lot of the people you work with is really cool. I mean, we always need innovation in society. We always need new things. I'm a firm believer in technology and the power of technology. Do I believe technology can go to overboard? Well, it can, but I mean, at the same point, I think it's much better that we have a life expectancy of like 80 than previous years. Our previous ages where technology was a lot lower and the life expectancy was something of 30 years. So, yeah, we can see how technology has changed our world, and I'd just like to see that continue. I'd like to see more do-it-yourself, and I mean, you're talking about do-it-yourself guns, do-it-yourself robots. I mean, I'm talking about do-it-yourself. We got musicians that do it themselves, game designers that are doing something on the level of the AAA studios just by themselves, one guy. That's what I'm talking about. That's amazing. Never would have believed things like that would happen 20 or 30 years ago. And, I mean, that's...
Mechanical engineering is also an amazing prepper skill, though, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you're prepping for the end...
Because a lot of the time, if you're just a machinist, right, or just a tradesman, obviously tradesmen are in high demand during the collapse, but the tradesmen have a weakness, which is, in order for them to do their jobs in our modern society, they're reliant on supply chains, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, an auto mechanic, in order for an auto mechanic to fix a car, they need the parts. Mm-hmm. And once the supply chain goes down, if a mechanic doesn't have their parts, they're basically useless.
Oh, yeah.
Right? As an electrical engineer, if I don't have access to my PCB making equipment, I'm basically useless. right? And so if you are an engineer, if you add the engineering part of it to the trades, then that basically means if there's a part that you're missing, right, because most parts are going to be missing, then you can figure out how it works and you can design the part yourself and you can fabricate the part yourself. Instead of having to buy it, which you're not going to be able to do during the during any kind of collapse scenario.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, knowing how stuff works is useful for fixing stuff. Because if you're a tradesman, you're only going to have a very limited number of things that you know how to fix. But if you're an engineer and you just you know how things work, you can kind of deduce how things how to fix stuff.
Right.
What was the 3D printer name at his
time? What was the name of the 3D printer that you were talking about?
Criticality Ender 3. You can also search up FTC9. So let's search up FTC9 and see what we come across.
All right.
FTC9, right? How to build.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
There's some instructions. So there's instructions how to build this thing. But if you want to get into 3D printing or mechanical engineering, buy a 3D printer, print some random stupid things, and then move on to the FTC9. And you get yourself a free gun. You have really impressive engineering skills, 3D printing skills. Let's say so the FTC9 is one of the projects you want to. It would be your final project.
Right.
I mean, there are people that won't allow that. Obviously, you won't be able to bring it into a job interview. But you can show pictures of it,
right?
And if they're offended, then they're probably not someone you want to be working for anyway.
Absolutely, because you got to be careful. You know, we have a lot of woke companies.
Yeah. So, let's see. The 3D printer is FTC9 is a project. Creality Ender 3 costs. How much is it? I just bought it.
You said it was $200.
Ender. Yeah. Creality Ender 3 costs $190 on Amazon.
Creality Ender 3.
I would recommend you all. Creality Ender 3. Once you throw in a spool, a 1 kilogram spool of filament in there, we're talking, and maybe some minor upgrades, we're talking maybe like $250 to get the printer to a nice level. You can just use the printer as is, and you can learn, but you're going to quickly understand that, hey, I want to make a couple upgrades to it. And so it's going to cost you a little bit more expensive once
you
start adding the upgrades that you want.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a whole world I'm not even familiar with. Like I said, the only thing I knew about...
Sometimes if you want upgrades, you can print your own upgrades.
Hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
The only thing I knew about 3D printers is, you know, a friend of mine, like I said, he used to make figurines. And I said, oh, those look really realistic. Those look very accurate. And I was like, 3D printers can do that? So, yeah, it's very cool. Now, I'm not condoning that kind of behavior because I know people want to 3D print their own waifu figurines and things. We don't condone that kind of behavior here because, you know.
But you could.
But you could. Anyway, thank you much, and you know, I thought the guys were gonna have some questions. Maybe they've all been answered, but it seems that they don't. So I mean, it is what it is. I'm gonna go ahead and.
If you got questions, you can just post it in the comments on MGTOW.TV, and I'm gonna check in a while.
Yeah,
and answer any questions.
Also, you've got a BitChute audience. Don't forget, I'm posting this on MGTOW.TV. I'm posting this on BitChute, and I may be posting it on YouTube. We posted our other one. I don't know about the 3D printed gun. I don't know. YouTube usually doesn't check. I have 14 followers on YouTube. I'm not really worried about it. So, you know, but BitChute has a slightly larger audience. Well, you know, more people are watching the videos on BitChute. I found that out. And MGTOW.TV, of course, they still have... See, a lot of things changed when Ammer decided to put the PUA stuff on there. Now, I know that doesn't really mean a whole lot, you know, one way or the other to you, but it drove a lot of the MGTOW guys off because they don't like the PUA stuff. So it drove away at least 1,000 people. And that's pretty bad, because those are people that would have wanted to come in and pay attention to, you know, what you're saying here.
Maybe.
However, they're going to...
Those are the ones on BitChute.
Yeah, they'll come over and they'll hear you on BitChute. So, you know, I want this information out there, because I think it's very useful information, especially, you know, for now, for today. So if you want to get yourself a really good paying job, something that you can do for the rest of your life and feel very confident and comfortable where you're at, maybe an engineering job and, you know, the different fields is for you. It's something you need to check out, something I kind of wish I checked out when I was a little younger. But, you know, it is what it is.
Never too late.
Yeah, well, you know, but I've already gone so far in marketing now that I figured I just want to continue with that. At any rate, guys, this will be the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration and Revy, and we are out of here. We will see you next time on Grim Interviews.
Later.